Are you ready?
Coming at you. Welcome to this Stamp Radio, another MMA podcast. We are coming at you live and unedited from the mean streets of San Mateo, California. Make no doubts about it. There are mean streets in San Mateo, California, Proteus. I just don't see them very often. Now let's meet my co-host, the one and only Maple Leaf himself, fighting out of the red corner. The man who once got an 8x10 glossy of Celine Dion and had Avril Lavigne sign it, Proteus.
Good morning, sir. How are you today?
Proteus, pretty exciting show that we have. In about a half an hour, we're going to have the lovely Steffi Haynes Crooklyn on Twitter. Follow her at Crooklyn MMA. She's an MMA writer, has her own podcast, the Three Amigos Pod, at Three Amigos Pod. So definitely follow her and follow them at that. And of course, in the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to have the one and only Beneil Dariush, UFC fighter number ranked ninth, Proteus, in the lightweight division, obviously with, dangerous crew there, right? Khabib, RDA, yeah. Ferguson, you name it. It's, I guess Nate Diaz technically is a lightweight. I keep wanting to move him up because he's fought twice at welterweight, but he's a lightweight.
Yeah, no, he still resides there, saying that you know, he wants to fight back at 155 again with Connor. So, I mean, like you said, I'm still 155er. I've never gone anywhere. And, yeah, Beneil is a killer, man. He's an absolute killer. I mean, with the record that he has, with only having two losses on his record, and you know, most of them coming in the lightweight division in the UFC, I mean, an absolute killer, dude.
Yeah, I'll tell you, that division, right, when you just look at it on paper, gosh, is that the best division in the UFC? Because when you look at it with Khabib, RDA, Ferguson, Diaz, Barbosa, Cerrone, technically, I guess he's still a lightweight.
Yep.
Chiesa, Dariush, Poirier. I mean, good Lord. Will Brooks?
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, if not tied for first with welterweight, it may even be pushing its head up above welterweight. Yeah, it's very exciting. And can you believe that the UFC at one time did not have this division? You know, they didn't want to start the lightweight division, and now look at it, absolute killers in this division.
Yeah, I didn't know that the UFC never wanted to have that division. Breaking news. We should have that breaking news, you know, ticker sound. Let's go into the night that was, Pro, because, you know, UFC fight night 93, Arlovski versus Barnett. I'll tell you, I'm glad that no one's taking my smack my picks up suggestions, because I would be losing a lot of people a lot of money. Because it's, you know, maybe we should really have the Great Buffalo Blue if he's willing to do it, because he's amazing. But let's talk about it, the fight that was. Let's go from, let's start with my favorite division, and you know what that is, any women's division. But let's specifically the bantamweight. Ashley Evans-Smith defeated the lovely Veronica Macedo, making her UFC debut. What'd you think?
I thought she looked absolutely fantastic, to be honest with you. I thought she looked fantastic in her debut. She was up against, as we know, a bigger fighter in Ashley Evans-Smith. And I thought she was giving her problems at first. You know, she was really giving her some fits with all the spinning stuff and, you know, her taekwondo creativeness, and I thought it was a good fight until, you know, midway through the second, when Ashley Evans-Smith started to pour on that wrestling game. And once it got to the ground, I mean, the bigger fighter is gonna, and the bigger wrestling fighter is going to know how to use their weight against their opponent, and that's basically what we saw.
Proteus, do you think the fight was stopped? My wife mentioned the fact, by the way, shout out to my wife. In tomorrow, it's actually going to be 18 years of marriage. So shout out to my lovely wife there.
Congratulations.
Thanks a lot. And actually, you know what's the funny thing? A lot of people say, boy, must be hard. No, it's great. It's easy. She's a lovely person, and she's a, you know, she's beautiful, but she's an even better person, which makes life a lot easier. Do you think that the fight was stopped a little late? Because to me, it was. It seemed like Macedo was in a position that she couldn't get out of, and I think that's when she got cut with all the elbows, et cetera. I think the fight should have been stopped a little earlier.
Yeah, I think what we saw a lot, or what we're seeing a lot in these cards, is that the refs are really trying to allow the fighters to have an opportunity, you know, to get out of these positions. And I don't know if you were uncomfortable with it, and I understand. But no, I mean, I think it got stopped when it got stopped. I mean, she was definitely getting hit with a barrage of strikes, and that's what led to the finish. And maybe seeing the blood and having the cut is what made the ref want to stop it. So I don't know. I'm not a ref, and I know they have a really, really tough job. So I thought it was okay.
We should really get, you know, it may be a great idea to get Aaron on just to see what, you know, when he thinks it's the right time to stop. Because I think Big John has mentioned it a couple of times, obviously Big John being on Junkie this week. But they've mentioned it a few times, right, about when. But they stop. They usually speak about specifically the knockouts, right, how they fall, et cetera. And I think Big John was on Inside MMA. But I thought he was on Junkie, too. Wasn't he on Junkie this week?
Wednesday, I believe, because they were off Friday. So I think it was Wednesday.
And they always talk about the way they fall, but I don't think they necessarily speak about when to stop it, because I think she was in a really tough position. And listen, the last thing we want are any more scars on anyone, let alone a 20-year-old beautiful woman, right? So that was a little unusual. Any fights in the undercard that you... Go ahead.
Hang on. Before you move on, Tony, just real quickly, I think another thing we have to take into consideration is with a larger fighter on top of a smaller fighter, it may be hard for the ref to, one, get in the correct position, and two, see exactly what's going on. You know, what strikes are landing, what strikes aren't landing. You know, there's going to be human error involved. So, yeah, that's all I have to say on that.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it with any fight, right? But I just think in this one, the position she was in, Pro, just didn't seem like a position she can get out of at all. So it's to me, that was a little, you know, a little rough. Anything in the prelims that you saw besides the Sobota Dalby fight, which the only reason why I'm going to bring that up is the flag that he was repping. But anything else in the undercard that you saw that was worth chatting about?
Yeah. I mean, the last fight, or the main event on the prelims card, I thought was an excellent fight. So if you want to do Dalby Sobota first, and then we can move into that, because I've got a lot to say about that fight as well, because I found it to be an excellent fight. So
yeah, let's go.
Up to you, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, let's go into Sobota, Dalby first, and then, of course, Ayari Wallhead. But Peter, of course, a very interesting person, but I just thought it was really interesting because he's Polish and German, correct? Or Polish, I think, living in Germany.
Correct.
I don't know which one of the two, but he was repping Jamaica, and it had to do with the music that he was listening to. But he's also a very laid-back type of guy. By the way, no drug testing here. What did you think about that fight, just out of curiosity?
You know what? I did a quick Facebook Live after the prelims, and this was one of the fights that I talked about. I thought Sobota looked amazing, to be honest with you. He was, you know, light on his feet. He was tagging up Dalby. And then once it got to the floor in the third, that was pretty much it. You know, I mean, Sobota just was the superior fighter when it went to the ground. That was one of the things I was saying on the chat, was that these fights, Evan Smith, Sobota, and Ayari, were really entertaining to me. Great fights, great fighters. There was just a lot of technique on display. And to touch on what you said about Sobota being a character, I mean, hey, that's good, right? That's going to make him stand out. And apparently in 2 weeks, he's headed to Jamaica because he loves it so much, and he's going to go check it out. And probably a good thing because, yeah, like you said, there might not be any drug testing. But, yeah, I thought it was a great fight. I really did. I thought Sabota showed out well. Let's see him move up in competition and see what he does. Sorry to interrupt you.
A fan favorite, huh, Pro? I'm surprised because I thought Nicholas Dalby would certainly have a contingent there. But it seemed to be like Sabota was the fan favorite by far.
Yeah, definitely. He did get a pretty good pop, and you know, people were appreciating what was going on in the octagon. And let me just, before we move on, let me just say that the announcing team of Gooden and Hardy were amazing last night. I mean, usually I don't listen to fights with the sound on, but they came on with the sound on, and I was engaged right away. So I don't know if that helped me enjoy the fights more. I just thought that Dan Hardy is a spectacular analyst, and was really impressed with their work on this fight card.
I think Dan Hardy is a tremendous analyst, obviously being a former fighter. I have a hard time getting into that announcing team. I really do. I don't know what it is.
Is it their accent? Did you find it hard to understand their accent?
No, not at all. Not at all. I had a girlfriend that was English before, so the accent doesn't trouble me at all. I'm just so used to, you know, the team of Rogan and Goldberg. And you know what? With all the changes in the UFC, I better stop getting used to that because that may change soon as well. But Dan Hardy, I think when he breaks down fights, because they have something that they have on YouTube where he's breaking down fights. He does an excellent job.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy was a fighter, you know. So when you're a legit fighter and you bring that legitimacy, and then, of course, you know, is he still active? I don't think he's formally retired yet, right?
No, he's not. He still has not gotten the test for his Wolf's. I can't remember the complete name of what he has, the condition that he has, but no. He has not completed getting his second opinion yet, but yes, he is active and he is really in shape. Apparently he's much lighter than when he was actually fighting even. So maybe we see him back. I'd like to see him back, but I don't know. It's kind of one of them things like GSP. Do you really need to see him come back? You know,
not really. And either way, he has a career, Pro, right? He has a career.
Right. Exactly.
Out of fighting. Yeah. So yeah, I think he'll be more than fine, and clearly he is a professional at what he does. Let's get into Pro, the fight that you wanted to definitely touch base on, Wallhead versus Aguirre. You know, Aguirre,
yes,
with only three losses, certainly seemed like he had a, you know, unranked, right, fighter in welterweight.
Yep.
But certainly, gosh, it seemed impressive to me. I mean, it's what say you about the fight?
Well, amazing that these two guys were both making their debut in the UFC, and they showed out, to be honest with you. I was impressed with Aguirre. I was impressed with his footwork. He was circling out, and the way he was doing it reminded me of Muhammad Ali. You know how Ali did that with his feet? He would just kind of move them real quick and kind of dance and then get out the way. And his stance is kind of a long karate stance, right? And his the way he was moving in and out was amazing. It was almost like Conor McGregor, you know what I mean? Like how Conor does that with the long, rangy stance, and then he, boom, explodes. And Aguirre was landing some excellent right uppercuts up the middle from that footwork. Like Whitehead would throw and then he would just slip the punch and then, boom, uppercut up the middle. It was amazing. I wasn't crazy about the split decision. I thought that Aguirre probably did enough to get a nod from everybody, but Whitehead was still in the fight. And not only was he still in the fight, but in the last 10 seconds, he almost had that fight won. He landed a beautiful shot over the top and dropped Aguirre. He was on Queer Street for sure. And if anybody has ever gotten saved by the bell, Aguirre got saved by the bell on that one. It was, honestly, it was a great fight. These two fights, especially the two that we just talked about, I was impressed with the amount of technique that was happening there. And I see Ayari moving forward. I mean, let's see what he does against better competition, but I'm excited to see him fight again. Both these guys, actually. Even though, is it Whitehead or am I saying it wrong? Wallhead.
Wallhead. Judo
yeah,
Jim
Wallhead.
Wallhead. Yeah.
Wallhead. Yeah, sorry, my apologies. I said it wrong. I would like to see them both in the UFC and have another fight at welterweight. They both were exciting fighters, and unfortunately, Dan Hardy is a friend of Wallhead and, you know, trains at the same gym as him, so he was kind of rooting for him, but so the commentary was kind of, you know, skewed that way, kind of like Rogan does sometimes, but an impressive fight. If you didn't watch it, do yourself a favor, go back and watch it. There was a lot of excellent footwork on display in that fight.
I have a question for you on this, right?
It seemed
like the whole card was a tale of two fighters. I mean, literally, right? Because you had Wallhead, Judo Jim, Wallhead, you know, tatted up. Then you had Ayari with no tattoos. You had the same thing with Ashley Evan Smith versus Veronica Macedo. You know, it seemed like it was an unusual card, to say the least. I know that you really enjoyed it. I thought it was so-so. But
right.
I do think they somehow need to. It seems like any time they go outside of the U.S., with very few exceptions, I think Brazil, they usually stack up the cards pretty well. I think UFC in Mexico City is pretty darn stacked. But it seems like whenever they go out of the U.S., they don't really stack the cards that much. And I'm not sure if I'm a big fan of that.
Well, that's another thing I commented on. When I did the Facebook Live chat in between the fights, even though we didn't know, or, you know, some of these fighters have names and some of them didn't, honestly, if you just remove yourself from the situation, and of course, I did not watch the four decisions that came before the Ashley Evans Smith fight, because I believe there was all four of those were decisions. And that's kind of what I saw people commenting on, is that, you know, we've seen seven decisions on this card, and to be honest with you, the fights that I saw, besides the Alexander Gustafsson fight, which was boring as all hell, I thought they were good. I thought they were good fights. Lots of talent. We don't know these guys, but they have to build stars somehow. They have to build these names somehow. And this is a Fight Pass card, right? It's kind of geared towards the hardcore fan. I mean, I don't think a lot of casual fans were going to be watching this fight. I don't know. I don't know what the numbers are, but I think that's kind of why they do it. They need somewhere to build talent. And like I said about Ayari and Wallhead and Sabota and Dalby, I'd like to see them fight again. And Macedo, I'd love to see her again. So all these people are now on my radar, which, you know, if you're a hardcore fan, you gotta get into these fight cards that don't have huge names on them.
You know, one last thing on Macedo. I know that she refuses to go down to 115. She's not a very tall person. Maybe 5'2", 5'3", tops. She's listed as 5'3". I'm not sure I'm buying that. But she did.
Yeah.
She wants to fight as Danny from Automatic 253 Pro would say, Batman weight. Not sure that's the right weight for her, but, you know, it's her decision, right? She's a fighter. It's her decision. It's what she desires to do. We do have a caller on hold. Let's finish up the card. Let's go into the main card. Nick Hine versus Tae Bang. I'm not going to butcher that one, because you know how bad I butchered that one.
And I don't know if you heard it on the commentary, but they were both saying the name differently. I was trying to figure it out, and I just said, you know what, with Bang, we went with Bang. Let's just go with Bang. Sorry,
you know what? Dan Hardy just called in and wants to give the correct pronunciation of the name.
TJ, who's your mama?
Thank you. All right. What'd you think about that? Because I may give Nick Hine a little more credit than maybe is deserved sometimes, but I honestly think that he's going to pull something out, and it's always decision, or health concerns. One of the two, right? But were you disappointed at all in Nick Hine?
I was definitely, to start off with, I was definitely disappointed in the decision. I really didn't see it going the way I thought that Hine really got a hometown rub on this one. I was not impressed with that at all. I thought Bang looked fantastic in there. And yeah, did Hine look not as good as we should expect? Maybe, but I think he had a tough opponent, to be honest with you. I think that Bang is a gamer. I also saw a lot of great slipping of punches going on here by Bang, and his counter punching was pretty solid. I think, to be honest with you, that's what gave Hine a pretty hard time in this fight. And as I mentioned on the broadcast, you know, Bang's from South Korea, so his military service or his mandatory military service may have interfered in this guy's development, which, from what I saw yesterday afternoon, which was also fantastic, by the way, we'll get into that later. Well, I was impressed, and I was a little disappointed with Hine, but I mean, I guess it's his first fight back from having a long time off, so maybe that has something to factor into it as well, Tony.
Yeah, you might be right. You know what? We have a call that's been on hold for quite some time. Let's get
sure.
him on, and then we'll go
Let's
back into
it.
The card, and then we'll get into the card with Steffi as well, who's coming up in about 9 minutes. We go
Wonderful.
To the 415. We go. Welcome to Amp Radio.
Hey, how are you guys doing? Good morning to you, fellas.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Team Snap Crackle Pop.
Yeah, this is Kurt from Philadelphia, actually. And
hey, Kurt,
Kurt
from
how
Philadelphia.
Are you?
First of all, I just want to say great job. Great job on cutting out the fat if you smell what The Rock's cooking. Let me ask
well,
you guys
thank you.
This. Let me ask you guys this. So we've seen it a little bit as of late, you know, with Brock Lesnar jumping for one fight only to the UFC, and you have guys like Bobby Lashley going between, you know, MMA and wrestling, and even the Conor McGregor Twitter war he started with some of the wrestlers. Do you think
right.
that with the new ownership of UFC, not necessarily guys jumping from one promotion to the other, because I just don't think that's possible, but do you see more from like a marketing perspective, more engagement there between both promotions?
Yes. I've been saying this for a while, and sorry, Tony, let me jump in first. I've been saying this for a while, that I think this is the way that the UFC has been going, not just with this new ownership, but I think they've been working us to this kind of acceptance of these sort of things for a while. And, you know, we may even see some fighters fight in the UFC and then go over to WWE, you know, for appearances or what have you, you know. But, yes, to answer your question, yes, I do see that coming, moving forward, and more of it.
I think it'll be interesting to find out what kind of relationship WME right has with
right.
The McMahon family, because I'm not sure we know what that situation is. I think it's possibly more amicable now, because I don't think the Fertittas were big fans of professional wrestling, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right,
no,
guys.
I
appreciate the time. Have a good weekend.
Oh, great! Thank you very much for the
All right,
call.
Thanks a lot, Philadelphia.
All right, guys.
Thanks.
Cheers.
All right.
Well, that was exciting. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. Not
Always
bad.
Good to get live callers.
Well, and it's I don't think we talk a lot of wrestling, and I think because you and I don't really know much about wrestling,
right.
to be frank. So, you know what? We always
I can't
always,
do it.
I can't do
I can
it
do it. Yeah. I can. I can do it. I don't watch it, but a buddy of mine – a couple of my buddies really are into it, and I know, Tony, we had talked about starting a wrestling show, and those are the kind of guys that, you know, I'm in contact with. It would be
oh.
good for one of those shows, but yeah, I can talk it. I mean, as long as we don't try and get into, you know, particulars about wrestlers. But yeah, anyway,
everybody's on.
Move on, Tony.
Thank you.
That's
yeah.
correct. They are.
Yeah. You know what? It's interesting. You know, I didn't know that you knew that much about it, so we should probably get into that. I don't know much about it. I'm going to be honest with you. Late 90s stuff I can get into.
Right, right.
Early
yeah.
90s, but after that, I'm off of that, to be honest with you. Hang on. Someone just called about wrestling. Thank you. All right, let's go into the rest of it. We have about 5 minutes before we go, before we land Steffi. Follow her at Crooklyn MMA. Let's go into Darth Vader versus Queen Latifah. I got to tell you, I was really disappointed in Latifah's mind you, when you get hit with a knee like that, who the heck knows what happens, right? But I thought he was looking good pretty early. I thought Bader was was having trouble with him. What was your take on that fight?
Dude, I thought Latifah came out looking all right, you know, like you said, looking pretty strong. And he dropped Bader. He dropped Bader early in the first, or maybe it was late in the first. And Bader just got up and shucked it off. I was amazed that he got up from that. And not only that he got up from it, but he was fine. You know, he just recovered. His cardio and his conditioning must be off the charts. And let's be honest, he did look good at this fight. I thought, you know, his body looked good. I thought he looked really, really good. And, dude, I thought Latifah was dead. Honestly, when he went down the way he went down, I've not ever seen that. I mean, that was ridiculous. And then he goes, not only does he go all the way back, but then he just smashes his head on the back of his head on the canvas. And I was like, oh my God. And thank God Bader did not go in for extra shots, because I think we would have seen a problem here. I appreciate the fact that he just stayed on the walk-off KO. He knew it was over. And I mean, he saw the way Latifah just went down. It's just crazy to see the momentum carry Latifah over, you know, his equilibrium and just straight over down and like a statue hitting the ground. What an amazing KO. I cannot say enough about it. Bader took me by surprise with that one. And I think he saw it coming. I think Latifah was starting to get a little impatient, maybe a little tired, because, you know, you're carrying around all them big muscles and you're throwing your arms. I think maybe he was getting a little tired. Just an amazing walk-off KO. Crazy, crazy, crazy.
You know, I don't think I give Bader enough credit for his chin, to be honest with you,
right?
Because you're right. He got just torched. But Latifah, boy, I'll tell you, some of that stuff, you have to wonder how much brain damage these guys will take and why people walk away when they can, because that was pretty frightening, to be frank. I was really surprised, though, and, you know, just Bader in the post-fight interviews, and George Gigi always talks about this, right? Gigi from MMA Junkie Radio always talks about the fact that you got to call people out. And I'm not sure, I'm not a call-out type of guy either. That's just not who I am. But I
agree.
I will say this, though. I think you have to say more than whatever they want to give me. And I was really surprised that Bader said he wasn't interested in any title fights, because I don't think he's a big money fight guy. I understand if they're like the McGregors or the Diazes of the world, et cetera, the ones that really don't care and just know they're going to make a lot of money. Like, for example, Philadelphia, right, brought up the fact of Brock Lesnar and people like that. Those people are people that are going to make money whether or not it's a title fight. Bader, I don't think, is there. So I'm surprised that he's not interested in title fights.
Well, I think another thing that was a problem is that he did not get a title shot when he was on his run. You know, when he was on, I think it was five fight win streak that he was on, and he did not get that title shot because the UFC said what you just said. You know, you're not going to sell pay-per-views. And I've spoken about this before and how I think pay-per-view needs to go away, and they need to start looking into better models of making money, because the better model of making money is already there. I mean, Netflix is expanding all the time, and I'm sure they're making enough money. Anyways, I digress.
All
also,
right.
Bader had said, real quick. Bader had said that he changed his focus. He changed what he was doing. He's tried to be, you know, have fun again with it. And I think that's why he's not looking for a title fight right now. And because he's changing his mental, and maybe moving forward, we see him in some excellent fights and he can get to that title shot again. So
do you think it would benefit Bader? I think he's big enough to be able to move up and get out of that 205 division. No,
don't
you
know.
Don't see that?
No. I don't. Right. I think that he has an advantage where he is, to be honest with you, because what did we say? Barnett came in at 256. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he can. I don't know if he's explosive enough to contend with those kind of heavy hitters. I think he's good where he's at. Let's see what happens in this moving forward. I mean, he's getting older, but let's see what happens. I think he's fine where he is.
Because Junkie Nation is pleased to have MMA writer, blogger, Stephanie Haynes, a.k.a. Crookland MMA. Follow her at Crookland MMA and her podcast, the Three Amigos podcast. Follow them at Three Amigo Pod. Steffi, welcome to Amp Radio.
Ah, thank you for having me. How are you?
Great.
Good.
Absolutely fantastic. Yeah. I'll tell you, Proteus and I are big fans of yours. We followed you for quite some time. And so it really is an honor to have you on our show. Steffi, tell us a little bit about your journey into MMA. Before that, I got to get the origin of your name, though. Crookland, was that taken from the movie?
Yeah, and I'm from Brooklyn. It was kind of we all took nicknames from that movie and from a couple of others, but I ended up with that one. It's a really, really long story, but basically it came from that movie and because I'm from Brooklyn.
Yeah, I've never seen it, so I'll have to get into that.
Oh, you should definitely check it out. It's great. Origin, I got into MMA because my father is a big combat sports fan. We watched ISKA karate, we watched kickboxing, we watched boxing, we watched everything. So when, the UFC came along, it was kind of a natural progression. I won't say that I've watched from UFC 1, but I will say that I got into it right around, 20, right around UFC 20. I have gone back and watched all the rest. I've been around the scene, though, for quite some time, probably 12 years, maybe more, because I started going to the forums, to the underground forum, a long time ago, around 2003, I think. I got to know a lot of the fighters through the old MySpace and through the forums, because back then, all of the fighters were on the underground. I mean, Tito Ortiz was there, Josh Barnett. You could rub elbows with just about any of the fighters on the underground forum. It's different now. But back then, it was really easy to get to know fighters through the forums and through MySpace back in like 2005, the end of 2004 when it first came out. So that's how I kind of got into it. And I got to know a lot of fighters. It was a neat experience. You could definitely get to know them much easier than you can now.
So let's go ahead and get into who you work for and who you write for. I see on your Twitter here, you say Scribbler, which is just show yourself your personality. Anyways, I'll get into that later because we were gushing over you earlier on. So, so it says bloodyelbow.com, champions.co, playbook.draftkings.com. So how did these come about?
Sure. Well, I've been in podcasting for 11 years. I actually got the first thing I did was this tiny little podcast called MMA Conversations. And that was at the end of 2005, maybe the beginning of 2006. And Goes from Junkie Radio used to be there too. I mean, he's the one that brought me in because I used to hang out in his little chat area on MySpace. And when he would blog, that's how the podcasting started, was through Goes, who is an awesome human being. He used to release these weekly blogs, and they were so funny, and they were so cool. And lots of fans and fighters used to comment on his blogs, and we would all get in these blog chats and everything. And it was a neat experience. From there, they would have you'd go like on fight nights. I remember watching many a Pride, where they would set up these like chat areas and we would all go and chat during Pride events and even during the World Series and things like that, just every major event, we would all get together and chat. So anyways, I started podcasting on that show and it lasted for about, I don't know, 3 months maybe. And then Pro Elite was forming, and Elite XC and everything. And Pro Elite had this big site. And so they picked me up, and, you know, I became Cage Side Live. And that was 10 and a half, 11 years ago, something around – no, it was about 10 years ago. So we were the official show of Pro Elite. And that it became myself, Ryan Loco, and Evan Showman, who is, like, the greatest artist of all time. And Ryan Loco, who's a well-known and respected photographer and just an awesome human as well. And so we did that for several years until Tap Out picked us up. And then we became Tap Out Radio. We did Tap Out Radio for about 4 years until Tap Out just kind of disintegrated at the seams. You know, after Mass died, it was it was just a matter of time until they spun all of their little wheels off, and you know, they are where they're at now, which is non-existent anymore. From Tap Out Radio, I did MMA Sentinel, and I really wasn't into it. By that time, I was burning out, and so I took a really long break, like almost 2 years. I didn't podcast. I just wrote. During that time, I started writing for freelance for Cage Potato. They were the first people that actually gave me my first check. So, you know, hat tip to them, and they're just awesome people over there. I love Ben and Mike and all of those guys. It's sad that they had to shut the doors on it and everything, but they were great. But so from there, I was writing for Cage Potato a little bit, and then Kid Nate from Bloody Elbow found me, and you know, the rest is history. I've been with them for almost 5 years. I write for DraftKings and their playbook. I do underdog picks, and I also do some editing. I'm an editor, a copy editor over at Champions.co, which is a division of MultiPilot.
Being a former DJ, of course, the one thing that I gravitated right away was to your choice of music, and you seem to be all over the place, but you love industrial music. Am I right in saying that you're a bit of an industrial fanatic?
I absolutely am. One of the things that was so cool about all those chat rooms and stuff, when we all split off into our own shows, Junkie George and Goes, they were Tag Radio first, and they had this amazing – we all had chat rooms at the time. And so it was so much fun to go and hang out with everyone in the chat room. And I don't know, obviously you guys know that George spends a lot. And so he would go in there after the shows were over, or he would go in late at night, and he would put some music on, and that dude knows how to put some great music together. So that was that was like a regular thing for years. I mean, he would just hit everybody up on Twitter. He'd hit me up, "Hey, Steph, I'm going to spend tonight. You know, check it out around 11. And so, you know, a group of us would go over there, and he would just get down. You know, I love music. I like all of it, too. I love classical. I love industrial. I like old school rap. I like some of the new stuff. I like the only thing I'm not a fan of is country. But you give me some of the old stuff, like anything Johnny Cash. I love Johnny Cash. So, you know, I just like a little bit of everything.
So I have to ask you this. If you were a fighter, what would your walkout song be?
Bound for the Floor. Bound for the Floor, Local H. The reason why is because that is exactly where I would be in about 10 seconds of the fight.
Absolutely. So let's get into some talk about music and industrial music and electronic music, because DJ and I are both kind of into music and definitely electronic music. So give us some recommendations while we're here, while we got you on the phone.
Oh my goodness. Here's the thing about me. I never know the names of songs, or especially electronic stuff. I just, you know, find it. Mainly, I find stuff on Sirius. That's where I listen to most of my stuff. And via recommendation on Twitter, you know, somebody will, you know, zip a song by, and I'll just, you know, I'm curious about everything. So if I see videos on my timeline, especially if they're music, I'm clicking. So for me, if it sounds good, it's great, but electronic, it's hard to keep up with a lot of that stuff. So
That's true.
I wouldn't be able to give you names, but, you know, if you were to play something for me, I could tell you right now, yes, I like that. No, I don't. So definitely tag me in on some stuff, and I could give you a better a better description of how I'm thinking about it at that time. If you give me regular songs, I remember those a little easier.
Steffi, I have a question for you. The one thing that I like about you is that on Twitter, you're very unapologetic, and you literally say what's on your mind, or at least I think you say what's on your mind, because I don't know you on a personal basis, right? Find that there's any added pressure being a female journalist as opposed to just being a normal MMA journalist, that there's a little bit more pressure added?
I used to. We'll say that. I used to. In the beginning, I felt I had to prove something. This sport, even today, you know, there's a lot of a lot more female journalists out there now. But when I got started, there was one. It was Loretta Hunt. And Loretta's kind of like my mentor as far as writing goes and reporting in general. She set the bar really high, so I aspire to get somewhere close to that. I know I'll never be on her level because, you know, she's the queen, and you can't touch the queen. But, you know, I strive all the time to be as good as I can be and to continue to getting better. Iron sharpens iron, so I read a lot of other journalists' work. I love long-form stuff, so I read a lot of long-form so that, you know, because I've written several long-forms. So I like to read those so that I can, you know, pick up tips. You know, you can pick up a lot by reading somebody else's work, you know. Great artists inspire other great artists. And so I look at it that way. But I'm sorry, getting back. What was your question again?
just do you feel any added pressure being a female journalist and basically speaking your mind on Twitter?
Yeah, no, back then, I used to feel like I had to prove something. You know, it's always been really male-oriented, male-dominated. And even today, you know, there's several more of us, but still, the vast majority is a bunch of dudes writing about it. I get the occasional, why are you doing breakdowns? You're a girl. But I honestly can't say that I've had an overwhelming wave of negativity or anything like that. People have embraced me pretty much from the beginning. I get, you know, the random person that doesn't like me. I won't say haters because I'm not a fan of that term. That term is only for sarcasm and comedy. But I, you know, not going to be everybody's cup of tea. So I don't think that that's because I'm a woman. I think that's just because, you know, I am a big mouth, and I am really outspoken, and I do call people out and, you know, on their bullshit. And I hope that when I'm stupid, that somebody calls me on my bullshit, which, you know, people have. I've developed great friendships over somebody calling me out because, you know what, they saw something that I was doing that was messed up, and, you know, they said, hey, you know, that's messed up. And when you take a good long look at yourself, you're going to find that there's a lot of shit that's wrong with you, you know? So you have to look at it like that.
Yeah. First of all, before I get into my question, I want to say that it's been a pleasure. I do the live blogging for the site on Twitter, and it's been a pleasure kind of going back and forth with you or just reading the stuff that you put out as you go live, you know, with the fight. Some of the shit that you come out with, it just makes me laugh. And then of course I'm like behind on my live tweeting because I'm laughing at whatever the hell you just said. So it's been fun though. It's really been fun going back and forth and seeing the banter that you put out on your Twitter. But having said that, let's get into the fights. And Tony asked me a question at the beginning of the show, and I'm going to recycle his question and ask you, what stood out to you on the preliminary cards? With the preliminary card, was there anything that you thought was worth noting?
The preliminaries being the early prelims, or the whole thing up until the main card? Because there was a couple of things on the whole thing up to the main card.
Right. So let's go like Ayari Wellhead, Sabota Dalby, and Ashley Evans Smith. Like, let's go back, you know, that far if you want, or if you can want to go back further, go back further.
Oh no, you picked the two that that stood out to me was the Ashley Evans Smith fight and the Ari Wellhead fight. Evans Smith, I would have liked to have seen that fight get the fight of the night honors, simply because, you know, when you have great fights that are on the undercard, they tend to get lost in the shadow of whatever happens on the main card, especially if the main event is a great, you know, is a great fight.
Right.
I don't see any problem with having two fight of the nights. You know what I mean? I absolutely don't see a problem with that. And those girls fought hard. You got Veronica Macedo, who, you know, she's been a pro all of about 3 minutes. She, you know, stacked in 6 fights in 5 months because she just turned pro in March. I think she went out there and she did a good job against a girl that was way bigger than her and was beasting her all over the place, but she did a pretty decent job, especially on the ground. She's one of Braulio Estima's, you know, prodigies. So when you're out there and you're against a much bigger girl and you're still giving up a good fight, and, you know, it took Ashley until the third round, I believe, until like 2 minutes and 40-something seconds into the third round to finally get the fight stopped. Had that fight happened at 125, I feel like Veronica Macedo might have been able to, you know, capture the win or at least be much closer than she was, because by the time the third round rolled around, you know, she was pretty much done. But anyways, I would have liked to have seen that fight get fight of the night honors. Jimmy Wallet and Ayari, oh my goodness. Judo Jim won that fight. What the hell? Oh my goodness. I'm a big proponent of overhauling the system, or at least getting these guys overhauling the judges themselves, because you've got boxing judges out there that don't know the really fine details of grappling. That's the problem. That's the majority problem right there. If we could fix that, I think that we wouldn't have so many issues with judging. And that fight was just a travesty. I feel so bad for Judo Jim. I hope the UFC reached out to him and gave him a little, you know, side something back in the locker room, because he deserved to win.
Wow.
And those are the two fights that I liked that I feel like were kind of controversial.
Just out of curiosity, on the main card, Steffi, were you, and I know I want to ask you before, remind me before, I'll remind myself before you're out of here, I want to ask you about Carlos Condit. But going into the main card, anything that really surprised you there? I was disappointed myself in Nick Heim. Kind of surprised at the way Bader's chin held up. Gustafson, I think we kind of knew. I thought Błachowicz may have had a chance just due to, I was picking as you, and gosh, we're going to run out of time, but I want to ask you about how you picked the underdog.
Time. Don't worry.
Oh, good.
I'll sit in with you for the rest of this discussion of the card. Okay, for Nick Heim, I think people underestimated how tough Bang is, or Bung, as they were calling him.
Right.
What's his name? Goodman. What's his name?
Gooden.
John Gooden. Yeah. Hearing him calling him Bung was the highlight of my night. Seriously, that was awesome. He was calling him Bung. You know, Bang Bung.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. I don't think that people realized how tough he was going to be, and people stopped realizing that Nick Heim had to pull out of 2 fights prior to this. So he's been gone for a little bit, right? Yeah. So, you know, and when he had to pull out, one of the times, I mean, he was almost paralyzed. You know, he was walking around with a prolapse disc, and it was in a precarious position. I think it was one of the upper discs, one of his thoracic discs, or maybe even a cervical disc. I don't think it was in the lumbar area. In any event, he was walking around with this prolapse disc, and, you know, he wasn't getting treated for it, and he was still grappling. So he got to the point where his arm was going numb, and, you know, he was getting the shakes and losing feeling in various parts of his body. It was crazy. So he had to take some time off, and I think people didn't snap to that, you know, that he had been off for a while. He was just getting his wings back under him and everything. And then there's Bang, who was pretty damn tough. So, you know, I don't really want to, you know, throw salt on him too much, because, you know, I always give guys that are coming off of a long break, a one fight cushion, so to speak.
Right.
As far as Gustafson, let's talk Gustafson. This dude has the potential to be amazing. The guy that fought John Bones Jones and the guy that gave Daniel Cormier a really good run for his money was not the same guy that fought Jan Błachowicz. Jan Błachowicz should not have been able to last three rounds with Alexander Gustafsson. You know, he's not that guy. But Gustafsson either fights down to the level of his competition or up, as he did with Jonbone Jones, because an argument could be made that he won that fight. So you've got this guy who either fights down or up, but he never realizes his own full potential, you know. And I think when he gets to the point where he just fights like the badass that I know he can be all the time, I think he's going to be great. And I think that, you know, 5 times out of 10, he beats John Jones. And maybe, you know, the same with Daniel Cormier. But he's got to stop fighting to wherever his competition is at, or he's never going to get these, you know, spectacular performances, and he's never going to be able to blow anybody out, you know?
Right. Yeah, I've been saying this on the show that I wasn't sure what his mental was going to be at, because, you know, he took some time off. He was talking like Carlos Condit had been talking about, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do next. I mean, but that probably happens when you fight the cream of, you know, the top of level of the division and come up short every single time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I agree with you. Like, what's next for Alexander Gustafsson? Can he turn the corner? Can he become the star that we want him to be? I don't know. But let's go back one fight and talk about how impressive Bader looked with that walk-off KO. I was saying earlier on in the show, I thought Latifi was dead. You know, the way he went down.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that Bader did not follow up with any shots.
Yeah. Bader has, first of all, he's got TNT in his hands. And he's got TNT in his knees. You know, he's a well-rounded fighter. Obviously, his wrestling is his bread and butter. He has a button on his chin, too, just like everybody else does. And when you, as you get older and you've been in some of the wars that Bader's been in, your button's going to grow and people are going to find it a little easier. If Latifi, you know, hadn't caught that knee, though, I was wondering, you know, because he was landing pretty good. He was defending well. He got a takedown on Bader. You know, and that's not to say anything spectacular, because Latifi's a great wrestler, too. And he's got that squat fire hydrant base, you know what I mean? He's got that lower center of gravity. So, you know, it's easier for him to get a double and power somebody to the ground than it is for Bader, who's got to bend over almost at the waist to get to somebody. I think that, you know, Ryan was very fortunate that he landed that knee, because it wasn't going his way up to that knee.
Right, right, absolutely.
But it was impressive. It was absolutely impressive. And it was also a great show of restraint that he did not go back down there until the referee was able to get in between. You know, awareness like that isn't with all of the fighters. Some of the fighters are just straight killers, and they follow up and punch dudes through the floor, through the mat, until a referee touches them to stop them. So I like guys that are aware like that, because I think it's something that needs to be developed more amongst all of them.
Steffi, I definitely want to be respectful of your time, so because I can keep you on for another 20 more minutes, to be honest. But I want to ask you about this. There's a fine line. You know, you've been in the biz long enough, and you actually have been in podcasting, 13 years now, I guess. But you've been doing this for a long time. There's a fine line between fandom and that sort of media line. And I say this because, obviously, to me, Misha Tate can do no wrong. And Jessica drives me crazy as well. But you have been a Carlos Condit fan for quite some time.
Yes.
What is the line? Where is the line where you go, you know what, I'm crossing from media into fandom? Or is there a line?
Okay. First, I have to correct you. I've been around the sport for 13 years, but only podcasting for about 10 and a half, 11 years. So
gotcha.
I just want to put that out there so that people don't say, hey, this bitch wasn't around in 13 years ago podcasting. Nobody was. 10 and a half, 11 years, yes. 13, no. 13 around the sport, absolutely, though. As far as the line, listen, all of us, with the exception of just a handful, we're talking Ben Folks, Ariel Helwani, I have a degree, but it is not in journalism, okay? There's only a handful, you know, the guys that I mentioned. I believe Luke Thomas might have something in journalism. Lots of us have degrees, though, but not in journalism. Mine, for instance, I have a bachelor's in nursing, Okay. So that was my, you know, that's my trade. But, you know, yeah. These days I don't do it just enough to keep my required hours every 2 years to make sure that I keep my license intact. But that's it. But a lot of us don't have journalism degrees. We understand the ins and outs of journalism, just like all the other journalists out there that do have degrees, because when you've been in the sport for years, you learn those things. I don't think that there's a really set, delineated line in the sand, though. I think all of us are fans. You know, it's hard not to be. And when you speak to someone or you write about someone over and over and over the course of many years, it's hard not to develop some sort of fan-like attachment. I'm not one that goes around and says, my boy, my girl. I am friends with a couple of fighters, but I don't refer to them as, that's my boy, that's my dog, like I see a lot of people do. And I certainly don't refer to them like that. And those friendliest of terms in public either, you know. We say friends of the podcast frequently because those are people that come on regularly. But my personal friend or things like that, my good friend, I try to refrain. I used to say it all the time, but I try to refrain because it's not professional. And while I never call myself professional, I call myself entertainment for the most part, I try to be. I try to maintain certain guidelines, and I've definitely strived to do that more over the last 4 or 5 years that I've been writing and people are reading my stuff. And you have to be careful, you know, because people are reading your stuff. These can be new fans that don't know. So you don't want to sit there and be very casual. I'm trying not to be casual. You know, I'm trying not to be anything but an informant, so to speak, an educator of sorts. And that's a very high elevated term, educator. You know, teachers, educators, professors, et cetera, those are our highest standards. Those are the people that teach the children. I don't want to look at MMA fans as children, but I would like to help inform them of the facts more so than inform them that I'm buddies with so-and-so.
Right. And Steph, I know we need to let you go, but and Tony and I have been arguing back and forth on Twitter about letting you go, but I need to get you to weigh in on Alofsky Barnett, and then we'll let you go. So
sure.
Talk about Barnett's $100,000 performance.
I think that it was well-deserved. I do think, despite the fact that I would have liked to have seen Ashley Evans-Smith and Veronica Macedo get that fight of the night bonus, it's more out of the necessity to see some of the fighters on the undercard see those bonuses, the people that need them. That's why I say, you know, it would have been just fine to give them both one because they were both great performances. Josh Barnett, you can't sleep on this guy. I'm a big fan of both guys. I would say more so a little bit Andre Arlovsky, just because I'm a girl and Andre Arlovsky is a good-looking dude. When I first started being a fan of Andre Arlovsky, it was simply because he would come out looking like this Russian god with these fangs, you know, and despite the fact that he was a killer and everything like that, the first thing that drew me to him was his physique and his good-looking face. It's taken some beatings over time, and his nose now looks like it's trying to run off the side, you know? But he's a very handsome guy. I've always been a fan, though, and as I've interviewed him over the years, he's just awesome. This is a guy that he sends out mass texts to everyone that's on his phone list, from journalists to people, probably to telemarketers, every holiday with some cute little holiday emoji. You know, he's just an awesome human being. You know, he's a great person. And Josh Barnett is too. I've interviewed him many, many times as well. But I'm a little bit more of a fan of Arlovsky, and seeing Josh over the years, even as he slipped a little as age has crept up on him. And I won't even say that because, you know, I think it's just in cycles, you know. These heavyweights, man, they carry TNT all the time, no matter what. People say Josh isn't known for knockouts, but when you gotta get a guy that's been in there for 17 years, maybe his button has grown, just like, you know, we've seen Arlovsky be knocked out several times. Mm-hmm. You know, you're able to put on good performances. You know, styles make fights, and the right matchup can make you look like a killer. I think that Andre Arlovsky was a perfect matchup for Josh Barnett, and despite me being a fan of Arlovsky more so than Barnett, I picked Barnett to win that fight. And it killed me to see how it ended because, you know, he was the first one to submit Andre, and he dropped him a few times. I got to give props to Andre because his grit and durability played, you know, he got back up after two knockdowns. I think he got knocked down one more time in the second or the third right before he got submitted. So, you know, he touched the canvas quite a few times. He, you know, gave Barnett an amazing fight, dropped him too. That was just an awesome fight. I just wish that there could have been two fight of the night bonuses, but Barnett, man, he's a handful for anybody, and I would never count him out against any of those guys ever, especially once it hits the ground.
Steffi, I always want to be respectful of your time, but I can say this. I think Proteus and I both are even bigger fans of yours, and I think we may even have a crush on you. So I definitely want to thank you for your time. Hopefully you'll allow us to bring you back again someday because I have so many questions for you, and there's never enough time. But, you know, we definitely want to thank you for being on AMP Radio. We're big fans of yours, I can say that, and you're even better on live than you are on Twitter, which is hard to do. So thanks for your time, Steffi.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, and I'd love to come back. You guys are awesome, and I think I've rubbed elbows with you guys in the junkie chat a few times too. I'm almost positive. Yeah. You guys were around in the tag days, right? And Collins a lot?
Well, Proteus.
I definitely was. Yeah, I definitely wasn't. I wasn't around in the tag days, but I call in all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I figured that. More so in the junkie eras, the when they first had their chat, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. I thought I recognized you. I think I recognized your voice from Collins. But anyways, thank you so much for having me. I look forward to the next time.
Thanks, Steffi. Thank you. Have a great day, and thanks for joining
you
us.
You too. Take care. Bye bye.
Boy, she's fantastic, isn't she? I mean, good Lord.
Sweetheart.
Yeah, she's so knowledgeable. And the thing is that she literally says what's on her mind. So I think, you know, I think we were both, you know, just, you know, in awe of her. And she's fantastic. She's just great. I mean, I think she's a lot better. Hey, we have a few minutes before we go into Benil. Anything else that you want to cover on UFC Fight Night? Because I really want to go into UFC 203 because there's so much.
Yeah, no, I'm good.
Do you want to go into UFC 203?
Yeah, I'm so excited.
That's coming up.
Real quick. I was so excited. I don't usually do this, but they showed the promo on the broadcast, and I was like, oh my God, this is going to be a great fight. You know, heavyweight championship of the world. It's going to be excellent. And I'm kind of an Alistair Homer. I went and met him when he came down. and so I'm kind of an Alistair Homer. So anyways, please continue, Tony.
Because you've met Alistair, how big of a man is he? Because he looks pretty huge. And you're 6'4". So.
Right. Yeah. You know, he was definitely as tall as me, but way wider. You know what I mean? And super nice guy. He not only did he sign something for me, but he signed something for my wife as well. And he's like, well, where's your wife at? Why is she not here if she's a fan? And he was joking, obviously. He was just joking around with me. But I was like, well, this was 4 years ago. And she, you know, we had an infant at the time, which we do now as well. But so she couldn't make it. One of us had to stay home with the baby. So, just a great dude. I mean, just meeting him quickly. And, I mean, as soon as he came into the gym, they switched the music from the old rock music that they had. And they put on the best electronic music channel that they had that they could find. And I was like, thanks for changing the music. I was dying. He's like, oh yeah, absolutely, man. Electronic music all the way. So he wins my heart there.
So looking at UFC 203 coming up, right? Miocic versus Overeem, Verdum versus Brown, Punk, Gall. I don't think, unfortunately, we're going to see much there. Faber versus Jimmy Rivera, and Andrade versus Calderwood. The one that I'm interested in, I really want to see Jessica I make a comeback because I'll tell you, I think she's a better fighter than what she's shown. You know what? I've just ruined that. Jessica I. Thank you. Making a comeback versus Mac my betch up. Nick Lentz. I mean, this is a good card. You know, Ian McCall versus Ray Borg. That's a darn good card.
Yes. I mean, and as it should be, right? I mean, we're trying to show out on this one. We're trying to get Cleveland sold out because it's the first time they've ever been there. We're trying to get that pay-per-view money up. So Travis isn't going to make much money off of this. Maybe Verdum might, but Stipe and Alistair, definitely. I mean, as I said just a second ago, I'm excited to see the heavyweight main event. I mean, both of these two guys are killers. Obviously, Alistair has a ton more experience than Stipe. But like I said, just absolute killers. The only problem I have, well, obviously there's two problems I have with this card, is that, you know, we're going to see Mickey Gall and CM Punk. Mickey Gall having all of the fights on the main card. And Travis Brown. I mean, Travis Brown versus Verdum. What's that about, right? I mean, we couldn't found a Verdum, somebody that he hadn't already beaten.
Was Travis Brown a replacement, or is it really just to give Verdum a showcase fight? I'm not sure what, because Travis Brown, when you really look at him, he's very athletic. He's long. I mean,
sure.
I think he's 6'7", so he might be like 3 inches taller than you. He's still young, I think, in terms of the heavyweights, but I don't think he's going to give Verdum much at all. I mean, for a co-main event, I don't see it. But what are you going to do? Give it to Punk Gall?
Yeah, no. He did fight Travis Brown, and Travis Brown was a replacement. He fought Brown on Fox UFC on Fox 11, and it was a unanimous decision, 49-46, 50-45, and 50-45. So, like you're saying, I don't know how much he has for him. And people were saying, like, on Twitter and such, like, what's Fabricio doing, you know, taking this fight?
You surprised, Pro, that the strawweight is over the bantamweight in the card? I am. I'm surprised. I thought Jessica Eye was a bigger name than both Jessica Andrade and Joanne Calderwood. So
yeah.
I'm surprised.
I don't think so. I think what we saw with Joanne who is cute as pie, by the way, with her last win. I think because she had a win and Jessica's coming off of that loss, right? So I don't know if you can slide her up. I mean, she's going to be the main event of the preliminary card. So, and Betch Bahia is no joke. You know what I mean? Like, this is going to be a tough fight. But no, I'm not surprised by the fact that they put Calderwood up ahead. Andrade and Calderwood are both of the big names in the division. Calderwood coming off of that excellent win and making all that news with getting a bonus because she couldn't afford to pay her fight camp. I think that's why we're seeing this fight come over top of the 135 fight.
I think Calderwood's in one of those. I think ideally Calderwood's more of a 125er, wouldn't you say? I think she struggles to make the weight at strawweight. She's not big enough for Bantam. It'll be interesting. Proteus, let's give Benil Dariush a call.
I apologize. I said 115, didn't I? I apologize. That's not correct at all. Yes, sorry. You're
all right,
correct.
So let's give Benil a call. Junkie Nation, it's an honor to have, honestly, my favorite UFC fighter, the number 9th lightweight in the world with a professional record of 13-2, Benil Dariush.
Yes.
Benil, welcome to radio.
What's going on, man? How are you, Tony?
Great. Hey, I know that I want to be respectful of your time because I know that you were just in church and you are so giving of your time. I said this to you in person, but I'll say this on air as well. You are a great fighter, but you're even a better person than you are a fighter, if that's even possible. And you know,
I appreciate it. I mean, that's the goal.
Tell me about your journey into MMA. Obviously, I know a lot about your background because I follow you, et cetera. But tell me about your journey into MMA. How did you get into MMA?
Actually, I got into MMA. Before I got into MMA, I got into jiu-jitsu. It was just something I wanted to do going into college. So because I didn't want to get overweight and out of shape, I heard college, you know, you gain a little weight and kind of get lazy. So when I was in high school, my senior year, right at the end of high school in May, I joined jiu-jitsu. And that was pretty much the first step into getting into MMA. I started doing jiu-jitsu, fell in love with jiu-jitsu. I started competing in jiu-jitsu, and 2 years later, I was offered a fight, and I accepted the fight, but at the time, I didn't know it was a professional fight, and then I came to find out it was a professional fight, so I had my first fight in 2009.
Daniil, I want to ask you this, because one thing about you is you didn't start training until you were really 18 years old in terms of full MMA, right? And your mother did not allow it, so you were kind of like sneaking in and out. And then finally your mother saw that you had a cauliflower ear, so you copped to it. How'd that conversation go?
Yeah, I was doing jiu-jitsu for a while, and I would tell my mom, like, oh, you know, it's kind of like wrestling. It's no big deal. And then, which was true, I was only doing jiu-jitsu at the time. And but then I got cauliflower, which was a problem. And then when I was doing MMA, I didn't tell her, just because I don't think she would have liked it. So I kept it a secret. But before the fight, I mean, my whole family somehow found out, and they all wanted to go to the fight, and then she got word of it. So that's how she found out about the whole MMA thing. But as far as her accepting it, it took a long time. I mean, I can honestly say I'm still of having her accept it, if that makes sense.
So, Benil, I wanted to ask you quickly, just because I was talking to Tony earlier on. I'm sorry, this is Proteus with you, Benil. Did you not do any wrestling up until you started to go into BJJ? Just a quick question there.
In high school, I tried wrestling for a month, and I really liked
right.
it. The reason why I only had a month was because I used to do soccer. Well, I tried doing soccer. I wasn't very good. And they were the same season. My senior year, I was done with soccer, and there was still a little time left to join wrestling, and one of my friends just kept telling me to go, and I actually listened, and I ended up wrestling for a month and a half, and I fell in love with wrestling, so that's what actually led me to jiu-jitsu.
Right, so you segued right into my next question. Tell us about your success in BJJ. I mean, not only were you a world champion at blue belt, purple belt, brown belt, but you received your black belt within just 5 years. So like BJ Penn, I mean, you really went through BJJ really, really quickly. So tell us a little bit about that. Tell us about your journey through BJJ.
Yeah, it was actually kind of interesting. When I started doing jiu-jitsu, I didn't have any plans on competing, but I really was having so much fun. I was doing it 2 times a day. So I did a couple of competitions, and I had mixed results. I had some wins and I had some losses. And I think the losses were what kept me going. And as a white belt, I was competing, and I went into the second biggest tournament, which was the Pan Americans, and I lost. And it was a disappointing loss. And because of that, I was kind of frustrated. So I had a couple of months left till the Worlds from there, and I made sure to train extra hard. So I don't know if I can even say I was looking to win, but I was I just didn't want to have the same results as last time. And I went into the white belt Worlds, and I ended up winning the whole tournament. When I won the tournament, I was awarded my blue belt, and that kind of became the process for me. Every time I would win a world championship, I would get my blue belt. So every year, I would compete at the Worlds. I would get my medal, and then I would be awarded my next belt, and that became our process. One of the years, actually, brown to black. One of the years I wasn't able to compete at the Worlds, so it actually took me 2 years to go from brown to black belt.
Benio, I want to ask
I
you
had
this.
A concussion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
Benio, I want to ask you this, because you fight under Rafael Cordero, right? I mean, you're in King's
mm-hmm.
MMA with fighters such as Hoffa, obviously, Fabricio, Lyoto, Kelvin Gastelum, Shogun, Vanderlei. Did you purposely choose that gym because of your, you know, you are obviously a black belt in Muay Thai under Rafael Cordero, but was it more of the people that they have, like, you know, RDA, Hoffa, the quality of the people, or was it really just because of working with Rafael Cordero?
Actually, it was none of... No, it was, I don't want to call it accident, but I just, I met Rafael Cordeiro very randomly. One day I was with my old jiu-jitsu coach, Bruno Paulista, and I had just done my first MMA fight, and my fight was a very close fight. I had a split decision. My stand-up was terrible, and it was one of the reasons why it was a split decision. I was able to win the first two rounds thanks to my jiu-jitsu, and I lost the third round because I was too tired to get a takedown. Anyways, I went into this gym. It was Babalu's gym. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Babalu Hinata Sobral.
Yeah.
He's pretty much a legend, in my opinion. But I went into his gym, and Rafael Cordeiro was teaching, and there was also sparring. And so these guys are all – he's about my size. He's about my height, maybe a little bit taller, and he weighs a little bit more than I do. But all the guys were heavyweights. Fabricio Verdun was there. Babalu was there. My coach, Bruno, was a heavyweight. A couple of other guys were there, all heavyweights. And he taught some moves, and then it was sparring time. And I'm thinking to myself, why is this guy putting on his shin pads and gloves and everything? That's probably not the best idea with all these big guys. But then I got pulled into it, too. They're like, yeah, put on your shin pads and gloves. I'm like, oh, crap. Anyways, I put on my shin pads and gloves, and I start sparring with one of my coaches. And the first round wasn't terrible for me, but as I'm going through the first round, I see someone, I think it was Babalu, going with Rafael Cordeiro, and I see him go down. And for some reason, in my mind, I thought maybe he got kicked in the nuts because, you know, small guy, big guy, no way he got hit to the body and went down or something
right.
like that. Anyways, next round, I can't remember who I went, but Rafael Cordeiro was going for Fabricio Verdun, and then same thing. Fabricio went down, and I'm just like scratching my head at this point, and the process repeats itself. I don't remember who the third guy was, but then it finally clicked for me, and then I was like, oh, man. And a little bit of fear just came into my heart because I knew I was next. I was supposed to spar with him next. So I'm next. I spar with him maybe four or five minutes, and in those 4 or 5 minutes, he brings me down 4 or 5 times, and it, only to the body. He didn't really go for my head. I think he wasn't trying to give me a concussion, and it wasn't like he was trying to hit me hard. It's just his placement was so good that, you know, he ended up putting me down. And after that, I was kind of like, okay, whoever this guy is, I got to learn from him. And that's when I actually figured out who he was. I started doing some research on him and found out his background and his history.
Yeah, so I want to jump quickly to the Mexico City fight card and the Tough Latin America finale. How excited are you to be going over there? And I know you're not the only one from your team going out there, but will you guys be going early, like to get adjusted to not only the elevation, but what we hear is that there's a lot of pollution in the air. And is that a concern for you?
Yeah, we plan on going out early to get used to it. It's you can't really elevation like that. You can't get used to in a week.
Right.
So we plan on going out early and adapting and just getting ready for that fight there. But the best part is I have a big team going with me. I have lots of guys going with me, and I'm really happy about that.
Daniil, I wanted to ask you about this. So you obviously fight at 155, and there's always been a lot of talk about you possibly moving up. But your matchmaker for your entire UFC career has been Joe Silva. Can you talk to me a little bit about, you know, the first call that you received from? Was it from Joe Silva?
Yeah, Joe was the first guy that called me and gave me the opportunity to fight. I had 6 fights at the time. I was 6-0, and Joe, we actually tried to put my name in the mix earlier on, but Joe was worried. He said, I don't have a lot of experience. My fights were really short, and he was worried I was going to get hurt if I went into the UFC. And so I was actually not qualified the first couple of times we tried, and then a short notice fight popped up, and Joe remembered my name, and he said, you know what, let's give this kid a chance. And he called my manager, and I took that fight. So with that being said, I was super, super happy. And Joe Silva, you know, I had to give him all my credentials. I had to find all my medals and stuff, and I had to find links and videos and send everything. He's really, really good at what he does. He was more worried about my safety than he was finding a fight. He's like, you know, if I was him, I'd be like, yeah, this kid wants to fight. He wants to fill in the spot. Cool. Give him to me. But he actually really watched out for me, and I appreciate that. I think Joe Silva is amazing at his job. I think a lot of people don't even realize how good he is, and I'm sad to see him go.
Now, Benil, I know we have only got you for another couple of minutes, but something that stood out to me when I was looking over having you on the show today is that you've done traveled the world and done some missionary work, and I'd like for you to go ahead and get into that for us if you can.
Yeah, mission work. I go with my church. I go to Calvary Chapel. We went to Haiti, Haiti is a really interesting country because the national religion was voodoo, at least
right.
Till the earthquake hit, and they've actually kind of turned over a new leaf, and they're trying to change. But with the national religion being voodoo, it's one of those places where it's very opposite, where taking is a good thing and giving is not a good thing. So, we like to go out there and we try to help. We have three churches, three or four churches now over there that are planted, and we every year we go there so we can support those churches and evangelize and spread the good word. The best part about going to Haiti is because every time I go, I see the change. I see the people changing, and it's just awesome.
That's excellent.
Benil, I definitely want to be, you know, cognizant of your time. My friend, you were very gracious, very humble. You're a quality person. We definitely appreciate your time. I'll say it publicly again, as you already know, if there was a Benil Dariush fan club, I would be president of it. But thanks for your time.
Man.
I really do appreciate it. You're a great person. And, you know, continued success. And hopefully you'll allow us to have you on after your or maybe before your fight.
Yeah, no problem. I shouldn't be an issue.
Thanks a lot, Benil. We appreciate your time. Thank you for working with us today. And God bless you, my friend. Thank you.
My pleasure. God bless, guys. Have a good day.
Thanks
Benil. I'll tell you, you know, that's a fine line, bro. I don't know where the line is, my friend, where, you know, you switch from, how about this? So, you know, I never got to ask you this. So obviously Benil, Bendo being my favorite fighters, who are your favorite fighters? Do you gravitate to certain fighters?
You know, as I've said in the past, oh, sorry, Tony, I didn't see that text message that you just sent me. As I've said in the past, I'm not a big fan of anybody. I mean, back in the day, yeah, I used to be a GSP fan. I used to like Bendo as well. You know, stand-up guys like Benil Dariush, I mean, what a great guy. I mean, you know, not only giving us his time, but spending more time to go, you know, and do things for other people in other countries. That's something I really like about people in general. I mean, you don't have to be a fighter for me to like that about you. But no, as I said, I don't really have favorites anymore. I've kind of got, as I've been in this sport, you know, for over 10 years, I've learned that, you know, being a fan isn't conducive to being level-headed and seeing the fights for the way they are. So I've tried to wean that out of my personality.
Lucky you.
Yeah.
I still can't, especially if I ever meet Misha Tate, right? That'll be the end of it for me. But
you'll be paralyzed if that ever happens.
There you go. You know what? I'd probably be paralyzed. For whatever reason, I've become a huge fan of Jessica I. I don't know why that is,
yeah.
But I have become. There you go. I've become a huge fan of Jessica I. I don't know if it's the weigh-ins. I don't know what it is, but I really have. I'm actually rooting for her. Tremendously, and it makes it tough, right? Because, gosh, well, you know what? I like all the women, right? I like Kat Zingano, you name it, I like them. So there you go. There goes that. But
right.
Shall we wrap, Pro?
Absolutely. If you're ready to wrap, I just wanted to say, I don't know if the audio came through on the first call that you made to me that, you know, I was really happy to have Benil Dariush on. What a stand-up dude. And, of course, Steffi. Jeez, that was awesome. We could have gone... You know, every time we have a journalist on the show or a personality like that, we seem to be able to go for 2 hours with them. They're just a lot of great personalities in this sport. And I don't know how they do it, you know. I watched what John Morgan was doing in Hamburg, and I don't know if you all saw the video I forwarded or retweeted of the Skoll. The Skoll, I don't know, it's a YouTube channel, and, you know, those guys go out and get blitzed, and then the next day, they're back to cover MMA again. I don't know how they do it. Sorry,
oh,
Tony,
man.
I went on up on a tangent there, but
even without, well, actually, if you listen to today's MMA Roadshow, you'll get a kick out of that as well, because it's
right.
One of the guys in Sandu, I think, I can't recall who it is. One of the guys is absolutely blitzed on the show.
Oh, it's probably no, it's not Sandu. It's his partner in crime, and geez, if I can't remember his name right now, but he's awesome too. But he needs a couple of drinks, though. He needs a couple of drinks to loosen up.
Yeah. Well, Simon Head was fine, but I mean, he was just blitzed out of his mind.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Morgan's always one to call people out. So he was joking around, though, but he did say, hey, listen, he was talking about no job or something. He said, it was Abby. And he goes,
Abby Subban.
So
yeah,
that was hilarious. He was joking around, of course. But
of course.
So let's close the show, because you and I can talk forever. But I'll tell you, you're right. There are certain, and I don't know what it is with the journalists that we have. I don't know what it is, but there are certain people that we can go hours and hours. Bo,
yeah.
Austin, E. Spencer.
Yeah.
I mean, gosh, these guys, we can go rounds and rounds.
Cold,
you know what?
Coffee, Morgan.
Cold,
I mean, even Gigi.
Fantastic.
Gigi, I mean, we had to kick him off the phone too. You know what I mean? Like, it's unfortunate, but yeah, man, great stuff.
I love Gigi. Good Lord. I mean,
yeah.
Every one of these guys, you know, they're solid people, but they have personalities, and you gotta, you know what? Let's add Steffi to that list, because she's amazing.
Absolutely.
We definitely want to thank Steffi Haynes for coming on. Follow her at Crooklyn MMA and her podcast, at Three Amigo Pod. And of course, let's go with the one and only Benil Dariush, number 9th ranked lightweight in the world. Follow him at Benil Dariush. And Proteus, Twitter follow of the week, what you got?
Yeah, you threw this at me, and I was like, well, I don't know if I can do a music and a Twitter follow of the day
sure,
at the same time.
Both.
Sure. So, at In the Presence of Wolves, or just search them, In the Presence of Wolves. They're an alternative band. Yes, we all know I like alternative bands. Coheed,
okay,
In the Presence
of
Wolves. Yeah. So yeah, that's they're like Automatic 253. They're kind of on the independent circuit, and I would really love everybody to kind of give them some love. So that's mine for this week, Tony.
You know who I'm going to go with? I'm going to go with, I think I already gave Benil and Crooklyn a lot of love there. Let's go with, you know what? How about our girl who's going to come on the show soon? Gosh, now I have to find her Twitter. Wouldn't you know it, as soon as I'm looking for it. Let's go with Amanda Early, who should be on our show in the next couple weeks. She's an MMA PR person, a tomboy in high heels.
Ooh.
Follow her at AMMANDAPR. So Amanda with two M's, at Amanda PR. Follow her, Amanda Early.
Yeah, and Tony, if I can, before you move on,
yeah.
I messed up mine. It's at ITPOW band, In the Presence of Wolves band, if that makes it easier for you.
Way to go. Well, jump on
yep.
them. And of course, how about our own Steffi with the music and the industrial? Got to give her a shout out for that. Let's close, Pro.
Yes.
Thanks to Benil. Thanks to Steffi. And like that,
we're gone.
Hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.
Ha ha ha.